Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
So I normally don't check my YouTube messages, but tonight, or I should say this afternoon, I checked on them. And we got people, you know, you get royalty-free music and everything else. And what do you think happens? I'll tell you what happens. You get people, you know, the royalty-free music, or you're allowed to use it in podcasts and everything. And they give you all these things. So we're trying out some other music here. This is Neon Pulse. What do you think? I sort of like it. I don't know. So what's going on here? What's going on today? What is? Well, I was reminded... that today is the anniversary, 36th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre in China. So, what exactly was that? Right? Because we have a lot of younger listeners here who never heard of it, did not realize and don't realize what an event it was. I mean, this was in 1989. Let's recall the news coverage of 1989. There were only a couple of news outlets that did 24/7 in the United States. And if something was a major story, you'd have this special report come across the screen. And this is one of the, I would say, other than the space shuttle loss, the Challenger in 1987, I believe that was, January, end of January, beginning of February. This was like one of the big stories of the 1980s. So what's the history here? In the spring of 1989, a pro-democracy movement erupted in Beijing, China. Right? And led primarily by university students. They're inspired by growing dissatisfaction with the Chinese Communist Party's corruption, lack of political freedom, inflation, and a stagnant job market for graduates. The death of Hu Yobang, a liberal reformer and former Communist Party leader, on April 15, 1989, served as the catalyst for public mourning and then widespread protests. Tens of thousands of students gathered in Tiananmen Square, a massive plaza in central Beijing, to call for political reform. The atmosphere in the square was often optimistic, though tensions with the government were rising. As the protests continued into late May, now our equivalent here would have been the Occupy protests over in New York City here, right? So as the protests continued into late May, the Chinese government declared martial law. On the night of June 3rd to June 4th, the Chinese People's Liberation Army, PLA, was deployed to forcibly clear Tiananmen Square. Soldiers used live ammunition, bayonets, and tanks to push through the crowds. Protesters and bystanders were shot, beaten, and run over by armored vehicles. Eyewitnesses reported scenes of chaos, with civilians desperately trying to flee or protect one another. I mean, you got that classic photo that's been shown millions of times, literally since in the last 36 years, of the one lone protester standing in the way of a tank. Soldiers, right, the exact death toll remains unknown, as the Chinese government has never released official figures and continues to suppress discussion of the event. Estimates range from several hundred to several thousand deaths. I saw an interview a number of years ago of younger people in China, and they were asked about Tiananmen Square, and they said, well, you know, they were like, no, whatever, you know, bad people, you know, they should have law and order, we support our government, that sort of thing. The aftermath, thousands of protesters were arrested and many were imprisoned or executed in the following months. The Chinese Communist Party launched a wide-ranging censorship program, removing all public references to the massacre. To this day, events of June 4th are heavily censored in China. Keywords like Tiananmen Square are blocked on Chinese internet platforms, and even photos like Tank Man, the lone protester who stood in front of a column of tanks, are forbidden. So what's some of the legacy? The struggle for democracy and authoritarian regimes, the brutality of state repression, the power of civil resistance. Despite the government's attempts to erase the memory, the massacre remains commemorated worldwide, especially in Hong Kong, not today, folks, Taiwan, and by diaspora communities each year on June 4th. That's what's going on. So, people were in a little bit of a peeing match today on this. So, let's get that up here. So, the Secretary of State Rubio got into this with officials from China, and so they got into a little bit of a peeing match here, China and Rubio. So this is from CBS News. China calls Rubio's remarks about Tiananmen Square an attack. Beijing hit back Wednesday at Secretary of State Marco Rubio for saying the world will never forget the deadly Tiananmen Square crackdown in 1989, describing his remarks as an, quote, attack on China. Chinese troops and tanks forcibly cleared peaceful protesters from the square in the capital. The exact toll is unknown of how many people died, but some estimates exceeding 1,000. Right? Police were seen by AFP on Wednesday at the entrance of Wuhan Cemetery, a site in West Beijing, where victims of the crackdown are known to be buried. Officers were also posted at several intersections leading to Tiananmen Square on Changing Avenue, a broad thoroughfare that is placed under tight security throughout the year. Right? And Chinese Foreign Minister spokesman Lin Zhan hit back at Rubio. I'm going to share those remarks with you right now. During a Wednesday briefing in the capital, saying Beijing had lodged a solemn protest over Rubio's comments. The erroneous statements by the U.S. side maliciously distorted historical facts, deliberately attack China's political system and developmental path, and seriously interfere in China's internal affairs, Lin said. Taiwanese President Lai Ching-te echoed Rubio's remarks, vowing to preserve the memory of victims of the bloody crackdown. Going on and on. You know, they banned this stuff all over the place in China. So this was what got China's knickers in a twist. This is from Marco Rubio. Let me share this for you people on the video end of things here. In the spring of 1989, tens of thousands of students gathered in Beijing's largest public square to mourn the passing of a Chinese Communist Party leader who tried to steer China toward a more open and democratic system. Their actions inspired a national movement. Hundreds of thousands of ordinary people in the capital and throughout China took to the streets for weeks to exercise their freedoms of expression and peacefully assembly by advocating for democracy, human rights, and an end to rampant corruption. The CCP responded with a brutal crackdown, sending the People's Liberation Army to open fire in an attempt to extinguish the pro-democracy sentiments of unarmed civilians gathered on Beijing streets and in Tiananmen Square. The CCP actively tries to censor the facts, but the world will never forget. Today we commemorate the bravery of the Chinese people who were killed as they tried to exercise their fundamental freedoms, as well as those who continue to suffer persecution as they seek accountability and justice for the events of June 4th, 1989. Their courage in the face of certain danger reminds us that the people's principles of freedom, democracy, and self-rule are not just American principles. They are human principles that the CCP cannot erase. Something tells me we wouldn't get that kind of a reaction from other people if they won the election. Here's my question for you. Well, let me share a couple of memories here of that. So I recall, right, a lot of the Chinese dissidents, for lack of a better word, looking towards Americans who happen to be their American reporters, maybe some American students, just Americans, as to what we're going to do with this, and looking towards America for leadership in a real way. Boots on the ground kind of stuff, folks. The American response to that was, well, we don't know what we would tell them. And I'm going to say this. Let's say you go, and there are, and this is a generalization here. If the same things were said today, were occurring there today, would Americans of that age group be able to be the leaders that we need to be? I said this many years ago, and this is getting a little bit political here. I understand that, and I'll put a warning out when I do the podcast, right, when I release this. Do we have the courage and the backbone to be the leaders that the world needs us to be? I've always said that the greatest threat that we've had, and I think people here who are longtime listeners know my family experience with communism during World War II and thereafter in Poland. I don't think that the people in this country nowadays are that demographic that did not live through the Cold War, whose relatives did not go through World War II, World War I, the revolutions and everything else back there, back in the 1900s, will appreciate what this is, what's going on. I don't think that they would even know what the hell is going on in the world. Our biggest threat is the resurgence of worldwide communism, my opinion on this. C.S. Lewis, right, I believe it was the Screwtape Letters, he said the biggest weapon that the devil has against us, if you believe in the devil, right, is to make him believe that we don't exist, that I don't exist. Well, here we have the biggest threat that we have here with the with this whole thing is for the Chinese Communist Party to put everybody under the impression that they don't exist, that they're not a threat. We have people here, we have, even as we speak now, there is an open anti-Semite communist / socialist running for New York mayor. And he's doing pretty good as of now. By the time airtime comes, or this pre-recorded, by the time airtime comes, he may be the one of the nominees in the Democratic, if he wins the Democratic primary, he's maybe a mayoral candidate at this. After this massacre, China achieved most favored nation status. People felt that if we trade with them, things are going to get better. Our relationship has not gotten better with them. Perhaps that was the wrong approach. I'm not a foreign policy expert, but things aren't looking too good with them right now. Rather than friendly competition between neighbors, which is what capitalism is, we've gotten into a situation where we lost our manufacturing base and everything else. And I tell you what, we have the best intentions there. I don't think it's coming back for most of the stuff that we lost it to. China also in this at this time, put in the right after Tiananmen Square, right at that time, put in the one-child policy. How's that demographic bomb that they set off over there working out for them? I don't know. It's right? Let's not forget Tiananmen Square. Let's not forget who we are, where we came from. So what I have here, I'm that's my gut reaction, and I'm giving you my gut reaction here. And we're going to go to our first commercial break. And we're going to continue with the Taiwan National Anthem and a moment of silence for the victims at Tiananmen Square.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
Have you listened or watched the Safety Wars show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It's definitely, it will take some deep dives in some information that you might be interested in.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that is designed to actually address and assess your hazards and liabilities and is not standardized baloney from generations ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call me, Jim Polzel, at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you are receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces. OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Okay, we are back. We are back here with that. So, we have issues here with Canada, again, with the wildfires and the smoke and everything else going on. Out there. So what is going on with Canada? This is from ABC News. Smoke from a Canadian wildfire is not healthy for anyone, according to experts. As hundreds of wildfires burn across Canada, Americans' health could be impacted. As of Wednesday, 203 forests or wildfires are burning in Canada, according to the Canadian Interagency Forest Fire Center. The smoke forced health officials in the U.S. to send air quality alerts across parts of the upper Midwest on Tuesday and caused hazy conditions in New York. Also, California Air Resources Board. Readings from AirNow show air quality alerts in the Northeast, Midwest, and Great Plains range from moderate to unhealthy. And this is a report was from 3:55 p.m. Eastern Time. There is no such thing as healthy smoke and everything else, all right? So it goes into that. Now, we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive into this. So how are we looking at here with the fires? Let me do a share screen here. That's what we're looking at here is what we're looking at here with Canada. Right. So current fire summary, right? This is basically one up by Alaska. That's out of control. Right? And out of control. Under control. Right? The blue dots. Full response being held. Right? And over here, out of control. And you have all different types of sizes and everything else is sort of like one of those charts that tells you everything else. So how does this look with the United States? This is what we're looking at now with the United States here. All right. And it's along the lines of this. So we're all in the yellow. What does, and that's tomorrow's forecast. What's today's forecast? We're up in the red, and we're going to talk about what that means in a minute. Red, orange, yellow, right? So orange is worse than yellow. Red is worse than orange, and then it gets into other types of areas here, right? So, and you're able to, right? And what's tomorrow is these are some of the cities here that with the forecast, so with ozone, so you have Pittsburgh, ozone 80, PM 2.5, particulate matter 2.5, 7.0. Up here, let's see. This one is north central New Jersey, right? They have four things here. Ozone at 90, PM 10, PM 2.5 here, northeastern, right? Now, I'm going to go. Just for grins and giggles, let's see what they have for tomorrow for Clarkstown, New York. Here. Mm-hmm. right? You'll see all of that. So right here in the Philadelphia area, I'm in region 3 there, predicting in the orange. And the orange over here, and they are not listing Clarkstown, New York, because there is a weather monitoring station there. I wonder what the deal is on that. So orange is bad for sensitive groups, moderate, which is yellow, is for unhealthy groups. Now let's go into some of the more technical details in this. Right, so we downloaded the technical assistance document for the reporting of daily air quality, the Air Quality Index, AQI. So this is was published May of 2024 last year, EPA publication EPA-454/V-24-002. There's a nice screen on there, right? So, introduction to the AQI. The AQI is EPA's tool for communicating air quality. The AQI is divided into 6 categories that correspond to different levels of health concern. For ease of use, the categories are color-coded and provide statements about air quality, which groups of people may be affected and can't, right? EPA established AQI for 5 major air pollutants. The 6th one is lead, but you cannot measure lead in real time, as far as I'm aware. You can measure all these other things in real time, meaning, you know, there's sensors. For lead, you have to do a time-weighted average sample for lead. So that's much more where there's sampling. And for EPA methodology, if you can imagine an 8.5 by 11, I think it's 8.9 by 10 or 8 by 10 sheet of paper, mixed cellulose ester, if memory serves you right, goes into something that looks like a birdhouse, and they run it all the time. And they run it for a certain amount of time, and then they send it out for analysis. So it's averaged over a particular period of time. The AQI is EPA's tool for communicating air quality. The AQI is divided into 6 categories. Well, we already mentioned that, 5. The AQI for each pollutant draws on the scientific information that supports the health-based NAAQS, National Ambient Air Quality Standard, NAAQS, for that pollutant. The AQI value of 100 generally corresponds to an ambient concentration that equals the level of short-term NAAQS for protection of public health. The AQI values at or below 100 are generally thought to be as satisfactory. When AQI values are above 100, the air quality is unhealthy. At first for certain sensitive groups of people, then for everyone, as AQI values get higher, right? So, metropolitan statistical areas, MSAs, with a population more than 350,000 are required to report the AQI daily to the public. The population of an MSA for purposes of index reporting is based on the latest available U.S. census population. Again, census data mining. This is part of the reason what they do here. If the AQI values for all the pollutants remain below 50 for a year, then you may report the AQI at your discretion. In subsequent years, if any pollutant level rises to where the AQI would be above 50, then you must report it. So it goes in there, you have required reporting, voluntary reporting, forecasting, right? The use of air quality action days or community action programs, which are usually based on AQI forecasts, is voluntary. However, action days and similar programs can help you alert the public. So, and you have all about action days, real-time AQI reporting, the NOWcast. Submitting hourly data in real-time, the EPA is there now. System is recommended but not required and assists the EPA in providing timely air quality information. All right, so here we have the 6 different categories. Right, so names and colors for AQI. So for air quality index, 0 to 50 is good, and the right and everything else on there, and it goes into that. So here we have the standard AQI color formulas. Right. So the center AQI formula, our AQI colors are defined by the formulas red, green, blue, and cyan, magenta, yellow, and black, as shown in table 2. RGB is traditionally used for screen color, so it gives you all of the colors there that you have to do, right? Because there are formulas with those. There are what we had back in the day was month cell color charts, and colors are defined by hue, value, and chroma, and I believe another one is depth. They've added in there since I've been in school. And health effects. The information below describes the health effects that may be associated with the AQI pollutants. So ozone. Depending on the level of exposure, ozone can cause coughing and sore or scratchy throat, make it more difficult to breathe deeply and vigorously, and cause pain when taking a deep breath. Inflame and damage the airways make the lungs more susceptible to infection and aggravate existing lung diseases such as asthma, emphysema, and chronic bronchitis, and increase the frequency of asthma attacks. Some of those effects have been found even in healthy people, but effects can be more serious in people with lung diseases such as asthma. They may lead to increased school absences, medicine use, visits to doctors in emergency rooms, and hospital admissions. Some studies in locations with elevated concentrations also report associations of ozone with deaths from respiratory causes. In addition to the health effects that can be experienced in response to short-term 1 to 8 hours of ozone exposure, right. Boom. All right. 1 to 8 hours. Ozone exposure. Long-term exposure to ozone is linked to aggravation of asthma. Is likely to be one of many causes of asthma development. Particles pollution. Particle size. The size of particles is directly linked to their potential for causing health problems. Particles less than 10 micrometers can be inhaled into the body, also known as the respirable fraction. With smaller particles, less than 2.5 micrometers or microns, posing the greatest problems because they can get deep into the lungs, and some may even get into the bloodstream. Exposure to such particles can affect both lungs and heart. So we have premature death with people with heart and lung disease, heart attacks, irregular heartbeat, aggravated asthma, decreased lung function, increased respiratory systems such as irritation in the airways, coughing, or difficulty breathing. Going on, and now I may contribute to this, including cognitive effects, lung cancer, premature death. Carbon monoxide. Breathing air with a high concentration of carbon monoxide reduces the amount of oxygen that can be transported into the bloodstream to critical organs like the heart and brain. At very high levels, which are possible indoors or in other enclosed environments, carbon monoxide can cause dizziness, confusion, unconsciousness, and death. However, when CO levels are elevated outdoors, it can be of particular concern for people with some types of heart disease, even though you're not getting high levels outdoor typically, right? Very high levels. These people already have a reduced ability of getting oxygenated blood to their hearts in situations the heart needs more oxygen than usual. They're especially vulnerable to effects of CO when exercising or under increased stress. In these situations, short-term exposure to elevated CO may result in reducing oxygen to the heart, accompanied with chest pain, also known as angina. Nitrogen dioxide, right? Breathing air with a high concentration of nitrogen dioxide can irritate airways in the human respiratory system. Such exposures over short periods can aggravate respiratory diseases, particularly asthma, leading to respiratory symptoms such as coughing, wheezing, or difficulty breathing, hospital admissions, and visits to emergency rooms. In addition to the health hazards that can be experienced in response to short-term NO2 exposures, long-term exposure to elevated concentration nitrogen dioxide may contribute to the development of asthma. Sulfur dioxide. Short-term exposures, 1 to 6 hours, to sulfur dioxide are linked with respiratory effects, including difficulty breathing and increased asthma symptoms. These people are particularly problematic for people with an asthma while breathing deeply, such as when exercise or playing. Short-term exposures to sulfur dioxide have also been connected with increased emergency department visits and hospital admissions for respiratory illnesses, especially for at-risk populations. So, here we have the sensitive groups for each pollutant are in Table 4. Ozone. People with lung disease, such as asthma, report these sensitive groups. When the ozone pollutant has an AQI above 100 ozone, report these sensitive groups. People with lung disease, such as asthma, children including teenagers, people who are active outdoors, and older adults. Fine particulate pollution. People with heart or lung disease, older adults and children, including teenagers. In addition, some minority groups, people with lower incomes and outdoor workers, may experience higher exposure than that can worsen underlying health conditions. Carbon monoxide, alert people with heart disease, nitrogen dioxide, people with lung disease, such as asthma, children, including teenagers and older adults, and sulfur dioxide, people with asthma, children, including teenagers and older adults. So if we look here at air now, right, we're going back to that. We have people in moderate areas, 51 to 100. That's most of the areas. Unhealthy areas, 151 to 200, are up in Michigan, right, there. Right, over in Michigan, Wisconsin, along the Great Lakes. There in Iowa, that area. So that's what we're up to, is in the red, unhealthy, 151 to 200. So that is what's going on. So here we have AQI basics for ozone and particle pollution. 0 to 50, okay, you're in the green. 51 to 100, air quality is acceptable, but you may be at risk for some people. Orange. Members of sensitive groups may experience health effects. General public is less likely to be affected. In the red area, 151 to 200, health effect. And that's where we got into the situation a couple years ago with this, where everybody freaked here, and understandably and justifiably freaked. Purple, very unhealthy, and then maroon, a.k.a. Purple, a.k.a. magenta, and then maroon. Health warning of emergency conditions. Everybody is more likely to be infected. So that's the story on that. So again, got to keep paying attention. This is what maybe the news isn't going into, but as usual, we're going into it here. So, air quality guide for particle pollution. This is from airnow.gov. Air quality guide for particle pollution.pdf. Right? So air quality index, moderate. Some people who may have unusual sensitive, right? Consider making outdoor activity shorter and less intense. Watch for symptoms such as coughing and shortness of breath. These are signs to take it easy. That's for unusually sensitive people. Everyone else, it's a good day to be active outside. Unhealthy for sensitive groups, 101 to 150. Those are people with heart and lung disease, older adults, children and teenagers, pregnant women, minority populations, and outdoor workers. So for sensitive groups, make outdoor activity shorter and less intense. It's okay to be active outdoors, but take breaks. Watch for symptoms such as coughing or shortness of breath. People with asthma, follow your asthma action plan and keep quick relief medicine handy. People with heart disease, symptoms such as palpitation, shortness of breath, or unusual fatigue may indicate a serious problem. If you have any of these, contact your health care provider. So if you're in the red area, like in Michigan, Illinois, parts of Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, that area, now check the map. For everyone, sensitive groups, avoid long or intense outdoor activities. Consider rescheduling moving activities indoors. For everyone else, reduce long and intense activities. Take more breaks during outdoor activities. And if we ever get to hazardous, which we did get to during the last go-around here, avoid all physical activities for everyone, and sensitive groups remain indoors to keep activities low. And note, if you have and the air conditioner, stay inside when the windows close may be dangerous in extremely hot weather if you don't have an air conditioner. If you are hot, go to a place with air conditioning or check with your local government to find a cooling center available in your community, which means you got to leave the house, I guess. So they're worried about particles, and it goes on. We just discussed this. So when particle levels are high outdoors, don't use candles, fireplaces, wood-burning stoves. Use HEPA air filters, right? Or make your own portable air cleaner design. Buy or make your own portable thing. You got a lot of stuff going on here, a lot of information for us here. So I'm going to download this here. Don't you love doing this, right? And that's what we got here tonight with this. I mean, I always share the story of I'm working this, when this happened last time 2 years ago, where I'm working. I live in Clarkstown. And you could see the smoke coming down from Canada, right down at the end of my street. And it's coming, and I'm like, what the hell is that? And then, the groove note hit the fan there with all of that. So that's what we got here. We're going to take a break and another break, and we'll this is Choking Sky.
professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
You are listening to Safety Wars. Tomorrow's Safety Today.
Okay, so we are back here. Yes, that was, just to let you know, I'm watching play-by-play with my son's baseball team here. So, okay, where are we? All right, so we're going to go to U.S. Department of Labor news today. They have Department of Labor and Adidas America reached a settlement for $235,000 in penalties, resolving fall hazard and unsafe ladder violations. The U.S. Department of Labor has entered into a settlement agreement with Adidas America that requires the company to pay $235,000 in fines and implement enhanced safety measures at multiple facilities. The agreement comes after the department's OSHA conducted a 2024 follow-up inspection at an Adidas warehouse in upstate New York. OSHA initially cited for hazards in 2021. We're going to go through those. That found missing guardrails and an unsafe ladder. Inspectors returned in 2024 to find that Adidas had not corrected the hazards cited in 2021 and found additional unsafe ladder violations. The May 30, 2025 settlement requires Adidas to implement enhanced abatement measures at its facilities in New York, New Jersey, and Puerto Rico, including adopting a comprehensive safety and health management program, retraining employees on fall hazards, assessing and auditing potential fall hazards at each facility, and discontinuing the use of overhead storage in the facilities. Adidas also agreed to pay $235,000 in penalties with that. So let's take a closer look at what those things are. So right now I went through the OSHA establishment search. And we're going to start with the one from July 2020 at a facility in Pennsylvania. And we're going to click on that. And that was just a complaint with that. And it has nothing really to show on there. Another one in South Carolina, right? Let's see what this was. Right? There was two complaints. And this was in their warehouse, nothing cited. Then in 2021, here we have a complaint here with this. And this is the proposed, and again, this may not have been updated in the last couple of days here. And I don't know what the whole thing is. They might have been in litigation here with this. So citation, they were cited for four things. One of them they cited them for $258,104,000 for, right? Wow. Let's see. 1910-023-C11. The employer did not ensure that portable ladders use the gain access and upper landing surface that have side rails that extend at least 3 feet above the upper landing area. At the facility back room/mezzanine area on or prior to 10/6/21, a Werner 10-foot stepladder when used to access a mezzanine area did not extend at least 3 feet above the landing surface, exposing employees to a fall hazard of approximately 10 feet. Now, we all know, if you're a safety professional at least, stepladders are not to be used for access. You know, the standard stepladder. Did they have them? I don't know, but they're not supposed to. And there are instructions on the side of that ladder saying that. Now, there has to be a person out there inspecting this stuff regularly. I try to do it every month when I was in charge. Make sure that the labels are on there. And the labels are not on there. It's not a ladder that passes inspection or requirements. All right. So that was a serious penalty for that. Let's go back one. All right, this is a contested one. 1910.28B1I, except for provided elsewhere, the employer did not ensure that each employee on walking working surface when an unprotected side or edge that's 4 feet or more above the lower level is protected from falling by one or more of the following systems described in 1910, and it goes on and on. At the facility, factory mezzanine area, on or prior to 10/6/21, the mezzanine area was not equipped with standard guardrails or equivalent exposed sides, exposing employees to a fall hazard of 10 feet. So, what was that on that? It ended up, and I believe this was the one, it was issued, of a failure to abate, which means that the really high penalties kick in, $258,104, $258,104 contested, right? And let's see, going back here, $235, so they settled for a little bit less on that. Here we have the next one, 1910-037-A03. Maintenance safeguards and operational features for exit routes. Exit routes are not kept free and obstructed. Or they put racks and boxes of shoes and apparel in the way. And the next one is 1903-019, right? This is failure to abate here for abatement verification. So $1,253. The employer did not certify to OSHA within 10 calendar days after the abatement period, the site of violation had been abated. On or about April 14, 2022, and at times prior thereto, the employer never provided an abatement certification. That's important. You know what they call an abatement certification that's not a result? It's called an invitation. You know, failed to abate, they're going to invite that. So they use that as an invitation justifiably. So, it's just unconscionable what people do. I'm shocked. I shouldn't be shocked, but I'm shocked with this. Adidas Outlet Store, Waikele in Honolulu. Four violations. Again, same type of deal, 1910-023, for walking working services, ladders, right? Again, as long as you're under the same EIN number here and it's the same company, and we're talking federal, not on the state level, because on the state level, they can link them together for certain things like workers' comp and other insurance things. Fire extinguisher violation. Now, I'm going to say this much. As long as they're the same EIN numbers, right, or the same company, they could go back and have a repeat violation here. We should probably go through the field operations manual on that. Again, nothing on that. So that might have been a different EIN number on there. And this is, again, in Chester, New York, the Adidas America, right, in Central Valley, New York. And this is a willful violation that was contested. This is one of the ones that they settled for $138,273. It's all part of it. The employer did not ensure that portable ladders used to gain access to an upper landing surface have side rails that extend 3 foot or more. And from at least January 31st, 2024 to May 22nd, 2024, a Werner 10-foot stepladder was used to access the mezzanine area and did not then at least 3 foot above the landing surface, exposing employees to fall hazard of approximately 10 feet while climbing to or from the mezzanine. So, what does this come down to with all this stuff? All right, what's there to be learned? One, obey the law to begin with, but after that, right, you get citations and everything. They say you got to abate them. Again, what's the cost-benefit analysis here? I mean, my question, let's start asking questions here. My question for Adidas is, what was the corporate culture that allowed this to continue? Did you not have people who knew what was going on there, qualified safety people? Were they just, that didn't tell you, was the management okay with this? And so, we're not going to buy ladders for some reason. Because I tell you what, a portable ladder of this type, under $200, or maybe $300 if you really want to get fancy. Why didn't they do it? I really don't know what exactly went on here. And again, what would the system, as Jay Allen has correctly pointed out, what did the feedback loop say that allowed something like this to happen? Was the company just like, look, we're not going to handle this, or yeah, we're worried about your safety, rah, 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 and then they don't do anything? Or what exactly was it? I'm not sure. Again, I've never been involved with Adidas or anything like that. So that's what I got for today. And this is Safety Wars for Wednesday, June 4th. And we're going to go out with our outro. And I hope to be back here. And this is the three programs this week. We are hot. We are hot. We're doing good this week. For Safety Wars and Safety FM, this is Jim Polzel.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.